Hi, this is Paul Ingram of PainScience.com, and today's post is Cognitive Behavioral Therapy for Low Back Pain. And this one is fully for members only, 100% just for my VIP paying subscribers. Hi, everyone. A few months ago, Scott Gavura, who's a friend and colleague of mine, a pharmacist and blogger for sciencebasedmedicine.org, sent me a quick question with months of consequences. He wanted my take on a research summary from a regional medical association's newsletter, which basically said that psychotherapy for back pain is full-fledged, evidence-based medicine. It works. Yeah, well, that's news to me. Everything I'd ever seen on the topic looked like classic examples of damned with faint praise at best. So this is my take that Scott asked for. Finally, Scott got a sneak preview, but it took me about a half year to build a solid new chapter about this for my back pain book. This also inspired a broader initiative to look at a great variety of mind over pain cures, and you've seen other evidence of that theme in the blog this year, and there will be a bunch more this fall. This is also, by the way, a part of a major project to expand the scope of my back pain book, which historically has had the dubious distinction of being really the only major thing I've written in this field that was sort of pet theory focused. Instead of writing a comprehensive book about back pain, I kind of went out on a limb and promoted one big idea far more than any other. And those of you who know me well can guess what that idea is. I'm not going to say it here right now. I'm not going to get into it. But the point is that it had a relatively narrow focus. And of course, back pain is a huge topic. So, you know, a truly comprehensive guide to back pain would be a massive book, a ridiculously large undertaking, and at the time that I started the back pain book, I was not prepared to even attempt that. So the back pain book was pretty focused, maybe too narrow for a long time, and this year I am trying to fix that and turn it into more of a complete guide to back pain. And this chapter is definitely part of that, with others coming soon. Anyway, so yeah, thanks, Scott. That's a lot of inspiration. I can't think actually of an example of more writing coming from one question than this one. So without further ado, I hate that expression. I hate it. Without further ado, let's get going. Let's get into this. The chapter starts off with the statement, let's get more mainstream with the psychology of back pain. And that's because at this point in the book, I haven't really talked about, you know, just straight up psychotherapy. I presented some unconventional perspectives on the mind game and back pain. And I've talked about the potential of rational confidence based on good education, with some particular emphasis on pain neuroscience education specifically. And I've also mentioned, although not reviewed, approaches like Dr. John Sarno's mind over back pain approach, especially because Sarno was so interested in the role of muscle in back pain, an interest that I do share with Sarno. But at this point in the book, I have not said boo about cognitive behavioral therapy, the infamous CBT, not to be confused with that other hot property CBD, cannabidiol. That's a topic I get to later in the book. CBT is the elephant in the mind game room. It's the overwhelming mainstream favorite. It's the champion of psychotherapy for all kinds of chronic pain. There are other ways to psychotherapize, of course, but CBT is so dominant that it's really the only option worth discussing seriously. No other approach can be standardized enough to study, and that's kind of a problem with CBT too, actually. So, this is not a chapter about psychotherapy for back pain. It's a chapter about CBT for back pain, because almost all psychotherapy for back pain is either way too idiosyncratic to study or it's CBT. So, can CBT help your back pain? Many patients scoff at CBT for back pain for the obvious reason that a psychological solution seems to presume a psychological cause entirely or mainly. And at best, that seems uncharitable to most patients. And at worst, it triggers outrage by pushing the all-in-your-head button. I have made the case in my book that back pain is definitely affected by the mind, but not fundamentally caused by it. In other words, it's not a psychosomatic problem. With CBT, it's sometimes hard to tell if it's about treating a cause or just helping people cope. Usually it seems more like the latter, the official CBT idea being to help people, quote, live a life with confidence in managing that pain. But many a psychologist crosses the line by hinting that better coping can lead to lower pain levels, which in turn makes it easier to cope, and so on. A virtuous cycle. Wisely or not, consciously or not, mental health professionals often end up aspiring to treat pain indirectly via that virtuous cycle. This sends a not very subtle message to patients. If you can use your mind to get out of this mess, then your mind must have gotten you into it in the first place. And some psychologists go further, skipping the complex rationalization, and just assume that CBT treats the underlying cause for back pain. They may do so without spelling it out. Just found a typo. Yay. First one. If it was spelled out, it would go something like this. So if they were spelling out this belief, this claim, this was what it would be. You need CBT to treat the anxiety that is the root cause of your back pain. That's almost always the form it's going to take. I don't think that that assumption is common, but it definitely happens. There are absolutely mental health care professionals, psychologists, and counselors out there who believe that. In short, most psychotherapy providers think or behave like they're helping with the consequences of back pain, which might actually indirectly help with the cause, but a few think that they're directly attacking the cause of back pain. So, are any of them right? However CBT supposedly works, does it work? What does the data say? So sorry, but the CBT data says, hell no! It's easy to find clinicians who have the opinion that CBT is evidence-based care for back pain. I do not agree. I see the usual scattershot mess of inconclusive clinical anecdotes, and I have studied this literature thoroughly and found no basis for those opinions. This is worse than a typo. This is a broken sentence. What is it supposed to say? I've studied the literature thoroughly and found no basis for those opinions. Full stop. There was just an extra word in there. For example, and now I'm going to talk again about Scott. This is the problem with doing an excerpt. In a non-excerpt, I like to have my intro integrate nicely with my content, but in this case, I'm essentially repeating something I said in the intro. Sorry about that. A colleague of mine from my days at sciencebasedmedicine.org forwarded me a newsletter post from a regional medical association to its members touting the power of CBT for back pain and looking for all the world like a credible source of evidence-based medical information. But they had cherry-picked a handful of positive-looking sources, all with major issues, taken them at face value, and then, and this boggles the mind, cherry-picked even more aggressively by just copying and pasting the single best-sounding result into their quote-unquote bottom line. Seriously, they took the paper, and if you know this topic, you know what paper. They took the best paper, they took the best single result, and literally just copied it and said, "This is it. That's the bottom line. That's the evidence." It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing to even look at it. And it gets worse. They then padded their footnotes with a few more really weak citations. And I always love it when I see this, because it's just like we're into full-on bogosity here. They even added a couple of just actually irrelevant citations. So, boo, I've seen more rigorous undergrad term papers. This is terrible, right? You know, it's up to little old me to say, yeah, all of these highly credentialed people who are better trained than me, they don't know about critical analysis, and they're not citing well. So what's the actual situation? CBT for back pain specifically has not been studied much, despite the fact that both parts of that equation are a big deal. CBT is big business, and there's lots of research about CBT. And back pain is a huge health problem, also studied to death. And yet, the Venn diagram of those research circles barely overlaps. As well studied as CBT may be in general, trials of CBT specifically for non-specific back pain neglect it. So that's weird. Yet again, we run into the limitations of modern musculoskeletal medicine. We are stuck mostly extrapolating from other sources, like CBT for chronic pain in general. The closest thing we have to direct evidence on CBT for back pain is two big, bad studies. There are two unavoidable positive studies on this topic, routinely cited by anyone who stands to benefit from promoting psychological therapy for back pain. The first is Churkin et al. In 2016, comparing CBT to mindfulness, and the second, quite recent in 2022, which I have posted about this year already in detail, and there's actually, that post is also a chapter in the book, Ashar et al., a study of pain reprocessing therapy, which is, very important point, not entirely CBT-ish, but quite CBT-ish, and it is getting cited in support of CBT. These two studies are unavoidable because they both have strongly positive results, at least on the surface, and both were published by good journals, JAMA and JAMA Psychiatry. So they are impossible to ignore, but they also share some major problems. The first one, high risk of bias. Very high in the case of Ashar et al., so high that it's interesting enough for the next chapter of the book to zoom in on that. That was my focus when I wrote about this study earlier this year. It really is quite prominent. I mean, there's conflicts of interest and there's conflicts of interest. And wow, that study has as bad a case of it as I've ever seen. Next problem that they share is that the results are so good that they just can't be accepted without replication. And yet, they are too different to reinforce each other. They are each independently just one study. Neither one is replication of the other. And they both have the same major technical flaw. Third shared problem. A flaw so serious that Dr. Edzard Ernst, a true expert in research methods, called it unethical pseudoscience. Let's go into that in a little bit more detail. Quoting from Ernst, writing specifically about the Churkin study. So he's not talking about this flaw in general. He's talking about this specific study and the problem with it. So what is that? Ernst says, in other words, this is yet another trial with the A plus P versus B design. As with our other examples, because A plus B is always more than B, even if A is just a placebo, the study design could never have generated a negative result. The results are therefore entirely compatible with the notion that the two tested treatments are pure placebos. Add this to the disappointment that many patients in the usual care group might have felt for not receiving an additional therapy for their pain. And you've got a most plausible explanation for the observed outcomes. Still quoting Ernst here. The A plus B versus B design can only produce positive findings. Any such study allegedly testing the effectiveness of therapy XY and concluding that it is effective ought to be characterized as unethical pseudoscience. Woo! Blistering. I'm going to interject here that he mentioned the Frustribo effect without naming it. I'm going to name it because I love the name Frustribo effect, as in the frustration, placebo caused by frustration. I've written about that elsewhere. It's just a fun term. The basic idea is that it suppresses results in a group because people are frustrated, disappointed, because they know full well that they're not getting the supposedly good therapy that people in the other group are getting. A well-known problem with certain research designs. The 2016 trial, that's the Churkin one, showed that both meditation and CBT were effective for back pain. That's often cited in praise of meditation, but the results actually flattered CBT a little more. So, good news? Unfortunately, my bottom line is that I simply don't believe the results. I don't trust this study, and I never will, and I cannot until it is replicated. The 2022 trial is even more impressively sketchy, though. Several of the authors have a conflict of interest so glaring that it's unwise to take their results seriously, and all the more so because those results were deep in too good to be true territory. They were not just good. They were great. They were bloody amazing. Far better than we've come to expect for any kind of treatment for any kind of serious chronic pain, let alone a psychological therapy. And in addition to that, the study had that other particularly bizarre and serious methodological flaw, point three above. And so, again, I just don't trust the study. Either of these untrustworthy trials could be right, but their only value for now is to inspire other researchers to check their work. We just don't run with two positive trials and say, aha, proof. That's just not how science works. Medicine is way too complicated for that, and there's way too many perverse incentives in research, especially in the last 20 years, to trust just one or two spectacularly too good to be true studies. So as far as I'm concerned, those two studies, which are, you know, consistently the best two, the big two, they're just virtually worthless. Until they're replicated, they mean effectively nothing. How about less direct and relevant evidence? A comprehensive 2020 review of psychotherapy for chronic pain in general, not back pain, but just any kind of chronic pain, was quite negative. And of course, back pain is the most prevalent kind of chronic pain. That was Williams et al., and nothing is ever the last word in this business, but that paper comes close. It's the latest of several versions and by far the biggest, with data pooled from 9,400 trial subjects and dozens of experiments. A few technical notes. Mindfulness was excluded from that study, as was treatment for headache. Only professional face-to-face delivery was considered, and the researchers shunned small studies to avoid a high risk of unrealistically positive results. They analyzed 75 studies, more than double the previous version, and two-thirds of those were women, mostly middle-aged, mostly with back pain, fibromyalgia, arthritis, and it was mostly about three related methods, but mostly CBT. There wasn't enough data about all other therapies, psychotherapies, combined to fill a bathtub, let alone a statistical pool with a deep end. So that's a big study. Williams 2020 is a big meta-analysis, as good as you're going to get for this type of research. And it was basically negative. CBT is the most studied type of psychological treatment for pain by a wide margin, and it was found to have a slight benefit only, which is synonymous with a negative result. No one wants dozens of sessions of psychotherapy for a slight benefit. This is not a good return on investment. Ain't nobody got time for that. My apologies, I've read a couple of footnotes that are maybe a little too dense for this format, for the audio version. It's always a bit of a dilemma. On the one hand, there's some gems in the footnotes, and on the other hand, they often veer off into detail that gets a little dry for reading aloud. But I am still following my one-take, no-corrections policy, so I read what I read, we muddle through together, and you get what you get. As I go, I'm getting better at this, but it's not a perfect format. this is never going to be the way that I'm doing this and the busyness of my career. It's never going to be highly polished audio content. Not until I make a decision to start a real podcast. But I digress, and I digress almost at the end. We're very close to the end here, just a little bit more. So, if CBT and psychotherapy for pain in general is underwhelming, it's probably underwhelming for back pain specifically. It's unlikely that back pain, which is the canonical example of stubborn musculoskeletal pain, is going to be significantly more responsive to psychotherapy than other kinds of pain. Possible, but unlikely. And that is generally what the research shows. The results tend to either be negative or only weakly positive. CBT for back pain's cousin, neck pain, equally unimpressive, according to a couple of citations. Not as well studied, but a little more indirect evidence there. If CBT worked fantastic for neck pain, if there was good evidence for that, we would obviously take that seriously and extrapolate to back pain, but there is no such impressive evidence. And that's the end. That's just all there is. There's no other research to consider. And none of it means that the mind is irrelevant to back pain or that people with back pain should never consider psychotherapy. Nor does it even mean that CBT has actually been entirely knocked out of the race. But it's not looking good. And the widespread belief that CBT for back pain is good evidence-based care, that, which is what Scott originally asked me about, is not even close to true. And there's your audio version for the day. Thanks for listening, members. Thanks for your membership, members. And I will talk to you in a rambly fashion next time.